This podcast is brought to you by Underwriters Laboratory, Workplace Health and Safety.
So the first title we're going to release is more informational for organizations, and it's really designed to help educate the entire population related to the new view of safety. So we get into looking at how the best-in-class organizations are utilizing these techniques to drive improvement, but ultimately set up the rest of the content that will be coming online at the end of the first quarter. This first module will be available for free, and we'll announce soon when you're able to access that content as well as where. Thank you.
This cool stuff's available at Underwriters Laboratory, workplacehealthandsafety.com. Think about it, you guys. They're great sponsors, and thank you for doing that. And now, let's get on with the podcast.
You need all questions without notice.
You need questions beforehand?
No.
This is what are you freaking out on me? Lines.
No. You're recording already.
Well, yeah, why not?
Okay.
So we're starting.
Questions without notice.
Well, yeah, but it's not. It's more really of a conversation. Think of it that way.
A conversation without notice.
It is a conversation. How many notices do you have to normal conversations?
None.
So?
But you get ideas.
So before you have a conversation with someone, you say, before we talk, let's go through some general idea of what we're going to talk about. What is wrong with you?
But when we went to the mobile phone store today,
yes,
we had a conversation kind of with notice.
Really?
Well, we were going to the mobile phone store. We had a goal. And
that was completely potluck.
It was potluck who we got.
Yeah, well, but that's what matters, right, is who we get. Yeah.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am so stinking glad you're here. Holy crap, this one's good. You're going to love this conversation, if for no other reason than I think the best metaphor I've ever heard for risk in the workplace is just kind of pooped out in the middle of this conversation. That's how good this is. It rocks. You will totally love it. So everything's going good here. Lots of travel. I just did the massive, giant, multi-city tour, and I'm getting ready to do another giant multi-city tour, and everything's great because there's one reason. It feels like summer, kind of. So the winter was short and kind of good. I'm knocking on wood when I say that because it could be really long, but it's not. And it's actually been warm. It's cooling down a little bit now, but I think we're going to make it. I think we're going to live through the winter. So without much further ado, though, let's jump into this podcast. I don't know what to say other than bet you a dollar, Australian, Canadian, or American, that you'll listen to this twice. Betcha. That's a bet. And if I'm wrong, you see me and I'll pay up because I'm pretty good. I'll probably pay with Canadian. It's a little better exchange rate right now. But that's kind of part of how it goes. Listen carefully. This is my buddy Lincoln Eldridge. And Lincoln's from SafeMap Australia. And I've been trying to get Lincoln on the podcast for a long time. Here's all it took. A nice meal, a bottle of wine, and some heavy cajoling. And you can sort of fill in the blank what that looks like and what it feels like. But until then, sit back and listen, because this, my friends, is a very interesting conversation around risk. So without any further ado, here's Lincoln and the podcast for today. So introduce yourself. Who are you? What do you do? Don't worry. You're fine.
So my name is Lincoln Eldridge, and I work with a guy by the name of Corey Pitzer, who we both know very well.
Right, yeah.
Corey and I, Corey is the CEO and owner of SafeMap International, and Corey and I have known each other probably now for what feels like a decade at least. And where we met was at a conference in the Hunter Valley in Australia. And I was working for another company at the time, and I spoke, and then Corey spoke after me. And I remember sitting up the back and listening to Corey and thinking to myself, this is a guy that I could work for.
Right.
I want to work with. Not actually work for, but this is a guy I want to work with, you know. And then as randomness, luck would have it, we were in a car back to the Newcastle airport. And that's about an hour's drive from where the venue was. And we ended up chatting about all sorts of things that he spoke about and that I spoke about and that I was really interested in and intrigued by given the nature of his discussion that he had with the delegates that day. And then as luck would have it again, we were on the same flight back to Brisbane, and I can remember chatting with him all the way back, and then we sat at the Brisbane airport before he left for Canada for probably about an hour, and that was how we met. And I walked away from that sort of experience thinking to myself, you know, one day this would be a guy that that I'd like to work together with, you know,
right.
Cooperate.
Collaborate.
With. Collaborate is the
Or
is
marry.
The word.
It's either collaborate or marry.
Marry, one
this
of the
is
two.
The guy I'd like to marry.
Well, I'm here because it's, I can't marry him because I'm here for my 20th wedding anniversary.
Yes, so. Well, it'd be complicated.
That would be complicated.
A bunch of levels. So.
And especially because we have a backwards government back in Australia.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So, and so what is it you do?
So I look after SafeMap's operations in Australia, but really I'm a psychologist by trade. Not that that means a lot, but what I'm most interested in is the way that human beings and technology and systems all come together, and the way that those technologies and those systems influence human behavior and human performance, things like that. So I'm most intrigued by that.
You mostly work in the energy sector? Where do you work normally?
We come out of the resource sector, so a lot of mining sort of background. Okay. And a lot of work out of the mining industry. But we've been doing some work in the aerospace industry recently, working with Boeing in Australia quite right. extensively for the last couple of years. And that's just been fantastic because that's a completely new industry. Guys working on high-risk work, classified work, all that sort of thing for the Australian Defence Force usually is their contractor. And that's been most intriguing. That's been most interesting. And this is an organisation that has really made a commitment a couple of years ago, both internationally and in Australia, to get very serious, I think, about safety.
Oh, that's good. So when you go into a client or when you go into a company or an organization or a mine or wherever you go in, what do you do? What do you do for them?
Well, we are most interested in understanding their safety culture, in inverted commas, if there is such a thing. And the way that we are interested in understanding that is through our employee perception surveys. So we have a pretty extensive survey tool that's been developed back in the late 90s and right through the last decade up till now. And it's a very extensive, world-renowned survey tool, quite innovative in the way that it taps into employee perceptions. And so what we do with our clients is try and give them a sense of what are people perceiving in the workplace about the organization, about leadership, which, you know, includes the managers and their direct supervisors. What are people perceiving about the processes that they work under? So things like, you know, what happens when you raise a safety concern? Do people follow up, or do you never hear about it again? Do you
get recognized? And this survey is more of a diagnostic. I mean, it
very
helps
much
you diagnose.
So.
It's,
yeah,
so it's
very
not really
so.
A culture survey.
No, you're right. It is more of a diagnostic tool. And so what we're able to do from that is give them a sense of saying, okay, here's where, you know, people might think that the company is really serious about safety, and they make really clear statements about safety, and then they put those statements into action. So the leaders in the organization, they come out and they walk the talk, you know, and then the company therefore is very serious about safety, and they care about us as employees. So we're able to give them that sense. Or it might be the opposite kind of thing. The company makes statements about safety and they're committed to safety, but, you know, when we see the managers coming into the workplace, they don't walk the talk, and so we don't really trust them, and, you know, we don't get recognized, and the rules we have are too complicated. So we're able to tap into those kinds of perceptions that employees have, right? And we do that in, I think, quite an ingenious and an innovative way by making it completely confidential and anonymous, and there's a process around that.
Do you get pretty good returns? I mean,
yeah.
What percentage?
Just before I came over, I did a project with a paper manufacturer doing the survey, the perception
the,
survey
the
that we run.
Yeah.
Yeah, the perception survey. And we surveyed almost, probably about 95%, 94% of
Holy
their employees
crap, really?
On site. Yeah.
That's super high.
And, you know, we work with the client to make sure that logistically it's organized. We explain how it works and what we're going to do and what our approach is and so on and so forth. And just it works. I did it late last year with Boeing in Australia, and they have, I think, maybe 9 sites and a couple of thousand employees. I think we ended up doing about 1,800 employees for Boeing. So, you know, I think it's a very effective diagnostic instrument.
And then you take that data, diagnostic data,
yep.
And what happens next? You coach the leadership, you train the workers?
What do you do? So we would start then at the leadership level, and we would work with the leadership of the organization. And our flagship program is the Safe Leader Program, and we work with the leaders of the organization right from the top down to probably about the supervisor level, so very much frontline guys that we're interested in. And then we have some workshops and programs that we do with the workforce that fall out of the content that we present in that Safe Leader work process or that workshop. And it's not really a workshop, it's a whole sort of process. And the content that we present to the workers is you know, falls out of that program. And then we have some other interventions that are designed to keep some of these learnings, some of these ideas and philosophies going and being maintained inside the organization.
So what would you say if you talked about your ideas and philosophies for SafeMap Australia? What is it you do? What are your ideas and philosophies? Where are you guys coming? Are you in the new view squarely? Are you old view?
Yeah, very squarely in the new view. And I think our view is that is one of recognizing the idea of safety as being beyond the things that we've traditionally done. So we've, you know, traditionally done things like, you know, compliance and tried to fix so-called at-risk behaviors. We, you know, get workers to be consistent. We analyze and investigate. We do all those traditional things that many organizations have done over decades and have, you know, and have obviously clearly worked. The evidence is that those things work. Our contention is that as we get closer to zero in our organizations, that these things become less, you get less return from doing those things.
Well, it's kind of the deal where more rules doesn't equate to more safety.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't comply more than you can comply.
That's, yes. And so driving workers to comply more, it really has kind of reached the end of its useful life, that as a strategy. So the question is, what's next? And organizations always talking about the safety plateau and breaking to the next level and all of those things that, you know, we all hear about. And so our view would definitely be then that if we want to move into the future, there needs to be the new view, that organizations need to embrace that. And I think personally, I think that's, you know, going to take a leap of faith and a leap of trust for a lot of business leaders and managers and things like that.
Yeah.
Just simply because...
Well, it's certainly a different way to think, right?
It is.
It's a new way of thinking.
It's completely opposite to...
Right,
it's,
right.
It's like when I come over here, it's like driving on the opposite side of the road. It's...
The right side of the road. That's how we say it over here.
Okay, driving on the right-hand side.
No,
let's
right.
Say that.
Just right. We don't right-hand. Say hand because that takes a long time. We just say right side of the road, which therefore means you drive on the wrong
opposite
side of the,
side
no,
of the
wrong,
road.
No, wrong side of the road.
And so I think it is like that. It's for a lot of organizations, a lot of individuals in those organizations, it's going to take a lot of mental energy and a lot of mental effort.
So how do you get them through that? What do you do when you get these leaders to make this leap of faith, you call?
What do we do? I think explaining what the new view looks like, what can they do in their organizations, in their teams? Where can they start in small ways to build momentum? So you're changing the world, I think, in one fell swoop is an unreasonable thing, and it's not going to happen. But what leaders can look for is opportunities to test out these new ideas. So they can test them out. They can put their toe in the water. They can try things with their workers, with their teams. They can present new ideas back to their managers. This kind of thing where they can build momentum, and it doesn't cost them a lot. So if something doesn't go right, then it's not going to, you know, be a major deal in,
or
in the
they have the power to, it's a micro experiment. They can back away.
Micro experiment.
Back away if it's not good, or do more if it's good.
Absolutely. Yep. Very much so. And then through a process of that, we would then come back and reintroduce the diagnostic tool again and say, well, let's resurvey, you know, your employees, and let's see how you've moved and how you've shifted. And one of the things I think that we're really focused on at SafeMap is the idea of safety being an expression of value, of care for the fellow human being.
Right.
That safety is something we want just because it's the right thing to want for people. We want them to come to work and be satisfied and be able to achieve, and we want them to grow, and this is why the organization exists.
So like a common good.
Yeah,
safety is a common good.
Yeah, and that no one is left behind. You know?
Right.
So it becomes this thing about the connection between people
rather than
a connection to a process.
Who do you find you spend the most time working with, the leaders or the workers?
I would say it's the leaders.
So I would agree. I would interrupt you long enough to say, it strikes me that if I had to tell somebody the secret weapon, it would be if you can get leaders to behave differently.
Yes.
Or leadership's response matters.
Yeah.
And if you can get them to behave differently, actually the rest of the organization tends to sort of
come along.
Yeah, right along with them. Yeah.
And I think a lot of that then influences, you know, people's perceptions of what the leaders care about. What the organization therefore cares about.
Why is that hard to do? Why is that leap of faith hard, in your opinion? Because, I mean, I think that's actually a really good question.
In my opinion, I think the leap of faith is difficult because, again, you're standing in a dark room, you have a torch, and the torch light shines so far in that room.
Right.
And what we're effectively asking leaders to do is to step away outside the light of that, where that light falls.
So let me just say long enough for our non-Australian listeners, torch is a flashlight.
A flashlight.
It's not a stick with a rag on the end dipped in gas. It's a flashlight. But no,
well, maybe in Australia we still have those kind of...
Certainly.
So we're asking people to step into the darkness a little bit, like step into the unknown.
I actually think that's then see what's there. That's,
you know,
a pretty beautiful metaphor.
To play with it
certainly addresses why I think there's hesitance to give up what's worked in the past. Right, so leaders want to hold desperately on to this has gotten me this far.
Mm.
Discipline, punishment, compliance, enforcement.
The reward is working safely. Yeah. You know, the reward is all those things. Yep, that I think. And what we're asking them to do is something that's new. We're asking them to sit down, and instead of having a conversation about safety rules, we're asking leaders to sit down and have a conversation about their personal values as leaders and how those values are linked to the company and the work that's performed. We're asking leaders to do that sort of stuff.
How does that fit in with risk? Because I think one thing you bring to the table, at least for this discussion, is a very forward understanding of risk. Most organizations do everything in their power to get away from risk.
Yeah.
And that's not the way you see the world.
Yeah, no, I would say the way that I would see the world is the way that the hurdler sees the hurdle in the 110-meter hurdle race. So for the hurdler to be most efficient and run the fastest time and have the greatest chance of winning, the hurdler needs to get as close as possible to that hurdle without obviously knocking it over. If the hurdler jumps too high over the hurdle, then he slows down and he's inefficient and he's going to lose. And so I think in organizations, what we have done in the past is we've asked workers to clear the hurdle at a greater height.
Yeah, huge.
You know, jump higher and higher and higher.
Yeah.
And that, as you know, that slows the process down, it slows workers down, it constrains, it creates all sorts of conflicts, and you know, it just gets people kind of frustrated really with work. And so what we are asking for the organization and leaders to do is to allow workers to get closer to that hurdle Now, there are a whole bunch of implications
come
with that.
Well, yeah, how do you do that?
Yeah.
Because now you're sort of talking about getting good at managing risk or risk competency, right? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And that is very, I mean, that's you're swimming upstream, buddy.
Yeah.
That is a very unusual, even though I completely 100% agree with you.
Yeah, it is.
In fact,
a big
one of
leap.
The things I found recently when I did an assessment at Los Alamos is that I had really smart workers who do high-risk work tell me that if you don't let me manage risk, my skills in managing risk erode.
Yeah.
And that this is it's a talent, it's an ability, it's a skill.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I can't do it, I don't get good at it.
Yeah. And if you look at people, teams that perform work in risk, as we would say, or perform close to the edge of risk or high risk work, whatever you want to call it. Those teams, I think, operate slightly differently. You know, when a group of forest workers go into a bushfire because they've got to go into the bushfire to put it out because
it's their job.
That's what they do. They do safety in a very different kind of way, running towards the danger. And I think they have their processes and they have their protocols and standards and all of the things that they do, but there is that it becomes this thing about no person left behind.
Right.
That I'm in this because I'm in this with you and you're in this because you're in this with me. And that's something that's missing in many modern day organizations about how we think about safety, because we think about safety in the old view. It's just rules and processes and systems.
And remove risk.
Remove risk.
Or mitigate.
Risk is a negative thing that has to be shut away, put behind barriers.
Pushed away.
And yet risk is actually something that, and here's the intriguing thing. If you talk to anybody, people will always say, but risk is how human beings learn. Risk is how we've grown.
Sure.
How we've created the world that we create and all those kinds of things. And yet, when they fall into the mode of the organization, risk is those things that we just talked about that needs to be put behind barriers and controlled and put over there. I think we can embrace risk a bit more. That's a pretty big leap, though.
Yeah, but that no, I don't. Yeah, okay, yes, it is a pretty big leap. Mm. But I think it's funny. Your wildland fire, your bushfire example, is a great one. But the hurdler example makes tons more sense to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the closer I can get to the hurdle without hitting it, the more efficient I am at actually running the race.
Yeah.
And that margin is really the margin that determines the difference between a winner and a loser, right? Or production, or non-production,
profit,
or
not
profit loss, whatever.
Yeah, shareholder value, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, yeah. And our view would be that the closer I get to that hurdle, the more skillful and competent I get in my technique of hurdling and my technique of taking a set number of steps between the hurdles and jumping at the correct time and all those sorts of things.
So how do you teach risk competency? I mean, what do you do? Maybe a better question, and let's go back to that question, is how do you teach leaders to be comfortable with the idea that workers need to be competent in handling risk? Because I actually think teaching risk competency is probably not nearly as important
as
teaching leaders,
leaders
to understand it.
So I think that at some level, leaders probably recognize that they need to allow their workers to be free to manage and deal with risk. I think they recognize that, but that the doctrine that the overarching doctrine of safety in the organization is we can't fully kind of acknowledge that. And so people accept it at an individual level, but at a group level, at the organization level, I think that's where people struggle to sort of let go of that old view. So I think how do we teach the leaders teach? I don't necessarily think that's the right word. How do we kind of try and help them explore this idea? How do we help them, entertain the idea that you can allow your people to be more risk competent and get a little bit closer to the edge, so to speak? I think we do that through helping them explore and understand the idea that the strategies that we have in place are now dying strategies. They've reached the end of their useful life. Will we still do them? Yeah, we've still got to do them for a whole variety of reasons. But into the future, what we're going to have to do is you know, say to workers, we need to give you the skills and the ability to manage and deal with risk. And the reality is that people are doing this all the time.
Yeah, I agree.
Workers do
agree.
This all the time, right? So it's about helping people to understand that I think this stuff is already going on in the organization. And if we can get them to that sort of place, and then coupled with the idea that safety is a value proposition, that the reason that an organization wants safety is fundamentally not for economic reasons, but fundamentally because it cares for its people, it cares for its employees, then those two things can come together, I think.
I think that's brilliant. I mean, I think that's...
I don't know what else...
I don't know what else you'd say, right?
Yeah.
And we give you a free T-shirt.
Yeah.
And it's perfect. So then the question is I guess the first question is how do I tap into that? How do I know I'm ready for that? And how do I tap into that? I mean, how do I get my organization to become interested in having this conversation so that they call people like you to have this conversation?
I think...
What would you look for that were symptoms of that dying strategy? Because one of the things I would add is I spend a lot of time with teams of leaders, usually pretty high up leaders, who are desperately trying to figure out how to become even safer.
Yeah.
Right? You know, even we want to – we're really
even
good.
We're so close, but not
there.
We
want to be even safer.
Yeah. So what would I look for in an organization? I would look for an organization that's, as we would say, in our organization, we would say they're near zero. They're a near zero organization.
Okay.
So and typically what happens is the near zero organization starts measuring sort of odd things. You know, all they're left to measure is – so this is the organization that basically doesn't – it's very mature. It's very capable. It's got good systems in place that you know, work and facilitate the performance of the organization. It's an organization that's probably well managed, that does, you know, audits really well and all of those sorts of things, technology, all that sort of stuff that, you know, towards safety. And so I would look for an organization that through their efforts has got themselves, you know, close to zero and is now starting to look at injuries and incidents and near misses that probably are what I would say, dare I say, trivial.
Yeah, you can say it to
me. They're measuring the
no pocket knives at the mine.
Yeah,
zero pocket knives.
Measuring the number of, you know, dents that happen on the light vehicle. They're measuring the what's a good example? Whether or not people hold the handrails.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You know, they're measuring whether or not people are walking across the car park, an open air car park, whether they've got their safety glasses on and things like that.
Yeah, I'm with
and
you.
And I'm not talking about not wearing your safety glasses inside the plant.
No, what you're talking about, I'll just say
open air car park.
You're talking about trivial measurements that are easy to measure and meaningless and won't stop somebody from dying.
Yeah, that's right. And in the meantime, they're not looking for the massive disaster that's just sitting there, the black swan that's sitting inside the business that's, you know, waiting to occur. As I spoke with Corey many years ago, we talked about it, you know, they're swatting the mosquitoes that are landing on them, but not thinking about where are those mosquitoes coming from or what is the swamp and whether or not they're even able to drain the swamp, you know. So there's something sitting over there. And they're more worried about what's buzzing around out here.
How do organizations look for you? How can they contact you? I mean, because it seems like between us chickens, right?
Mm.
It would be really a smart idea just to have a conversation with you, with Lincoln, or someone like you who could go in and say, "Here's a diagnostic program. We can sort of see where you are.
Yeah.
Here's a discussion around this notion of even safer.
Mm.
Here's a discussion around measuring things that are somewhat trivial and probably not very meaningful to catastrophic events.
Mm.
And here's how we can help you." What do they do?
Well, I think like any organization, we've got our website at safemap.com, and we try and keep a bit of a profile. We try and contribute to various forums around Australia where I work.
But they can get a hold of you, right?
Through the website. I've got a profile on the website and all the standard kind of things, email up there and things like that.
Sounds good, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
What'd we miss? What should we have talked about?
What should we have talked about? I think we probably had a good sort of coverage of things. I think we talked about some good stuff.
Yeah, you were brilliant.
Brilliant?
Even though we didn't coach the conversation before it happened.
Was it random?
Was it random? I don't know.
Was it free will?
Was it free will? I don't know. That's part of what we're going to have to understand. Thank you, Lincoln. That was a great job.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You rocked it, brother.
Thank you.
Unbelievably good.
Unbelievable.
Seriously, years from now, they're going to talk about how good this was.
They'll be downloading it.
Yeah, remember that one, Lincoln?
It's just going to go on YouTube.
Oh, my God.
It's going to sit up there. Oh.
And just YouTube. Be adored.
It's just like a billion hits. It's going to be.
That's right. You and
like
Justin,
it's going to be on those crazy videos.
That's right. You
shows.
And Justin Bieber. Yeah, that's who you're going to be. Yeah. That's you. You got
That'll
it,
be it, man.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
So, what'd you think? Did I not tell you? Did I not look you in the eye, or however I looked you? Did I not speak into your ear hole and tell you that it's one of the best metaphors ever for risk? Everything that Lincoln's talking about is something that probably we ought to be paying attention to. He's saying stuff that's pretty, well, I don't find it controversial. I don't imagine you find it controversial. But the idea that people are spending time managing trivial things and missing the big things, they're smashing the mosquitoes and not taking care of the swamp, that's really pretty profound at every level. The idea that organizations are – maybe your organization is struggling to become even safer may be time to have a conversation around risk competency. And here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Give Lincoln a call. Send him an email. Just try it out. And if you do nothing else, just have a conversation. And have a conversation around how this way of looking at the world, pointing that flashlight beam into the abyss – and knowing that on every side around that circle of light, there's mysterious next things to do, that's really where we want to be in this. It's a great podcast. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. It's been super, super fun. Thanks for listening. You make the podcast go. Remember, tell your friends, subscribe because that's important. And as always, try to learn something new every single day. I bet you did today. Have as much fun as you possibly can. And for goodness sakes, be safe.